Welcome to today's episode of the Birdseye Leadership Talks podcast. I'm your host, Martin Ravinsky, co-founder and CEO of Birdseye, and I'm excited to welcome a very special guest today, Mr. Mark Garson. Mark is the chairman of iBrands Global, Blue Zen, Pam & Gala, and several other influential brands. With a dynamic portfolio that ranges from fashion to technology, Mark brings a wealth of experience and insights into the world of brand innovation and leadership. A Princeton University alumni, Mark has spent decades shaping the steering companies towards success and has become a seminal figure in the area of branding and corporate strategy. Today, we're going to dive into his journey and explore his strategies and uncover some of the wisdom he's gathered along the way. Mark, can you start right away? Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Can you start by telling us about your early career and what led you to the world of brand management and entrepreneurship?
It was kind of by accident. As many people, when they start in their career, they don't really know what to do. Believe it or not, I was a basketball player, then a model. And nothing would make you think I'd be doing what I'm doing today. But I decided to get a real job. And just by coincidence, I got a job in the fashion industry, bringing a brand from France and introducing it to the United States. And I became pretty successful at it right away. And I would say that I didn't grow up thinking about fabrics or colors or lengths of skirts, but it just ended up that I was in this business and had success, kind of had a good feel for it, and started a career in apparel.
Led down the path from modeling to actually apparel, huh?
An accident. But it worked out.
Sounds like a good accident that worked out. With your role at iBrands, you've worked with great brands such as Lee Cooper and Echo. How do you approach working with those types of companies and managing such a well-known yet distinct brand?
For the most part, I've either owned or licensed many brands at a time. At one time, I had Echo, Rockaware, XOXO, Skechers, Harley Davidson, and FUBU at one time. Now, what I really tried to do was take brands that had a different point of view. So when I had Echo, it was for men. When I had Rockaware, this is at the same time, it was for women. This was more of an urban customer. Then we had XOXO, which was for a junior customer. Harley Davidson, a completely different customer. Yeah. So my idea was just to not duplicate what we were doing, but to give a full team and full concentration on one market at a time, doing different markets, if that's not an oxymoron, but you know what I mean by that. We would have maybe five different brands in five different markets, but none of the brands played in the same market.
So keep the buckets separate and focus entirely a different strategy on each one.
Right. And each team had its own designer, had its own salesperson, had its own road force to work with.
Awesome. Sounds like it worked out for you. As we all know, leadership often involves making tough decisions. Can you share an experience where you had to make a difficult decision and what you learned from that?
Probably one of the most difficult decisions I made was at the beginning of my career. There was a brand, a lot of people might not be old enough on your podcast to know it, but I'll relate it to how they can. It was a brand out of France called Naf Naf. At the time, it was the number one brand, contemporary brand in the world. I would compare it to maybe what Juicy Couture was like 10 years ago. And it was the hottest brand all over the world, not just in France or the USA, but everywhere. And the owners of the brand offered me to partner with them exclusively in the United States. But they weren't going to guarantee the exclusivity. So what has happened very often at the time when I was bringing in goods from Europe is that three or four or five different people might be bringing in those brands and might be fighting with each other. And there was no integrity. So one person could be selling the same thing I could be selling, but at a different price. And you would want to not only do proper thing with pricing, but a lot of times with a better brand, you want exclusivity. So I could be selling to someone and then someone else could be selling in the corner. So even though this was the hottest brand in the world, I asked the owners at the time, the French owners of NAF-NAF, if they would guarantee that I would have it exclusively and if they would prosecute anybody that broke this exclusivity. And they refused to do so. The reason they refused to do so is because they would be the ones probably that were not honoring the agreement. So I didn't take this brand, which was the number one brand from the country in the world that I was working with. Difficult thing to turn it down. But 1 year later, the portfolio of brands that I had did three times the amount of brands that NAF-NAF, the amount of volume that NAF-NAF did in the United States. And then NAF-NAF came to me a year later and not only offered me to carry their brand, but to go partners with them in the company. And it ended up being a very good decision. And what I learned is you can't just jump at every opportunity that feels, smells, or looks good. You have to research it and make sure that you're going to deal forward with integrity. Because if you don't have integrity, you don't have anything.
And your long play. Yeah. And your long play obviously worked out.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Throughout your career, you've had not only the opportunity to work across or work with, you know, different brands and fashion, but you worked in different industries from fashion to technology with Blue Zen and Brookstone Batteries. How do you adapt your leadership style to fit such diverse fields?
Well, interestingly enough, it goes back to the previous question you just asked me, and it's about integrity. Making sure, number one, that there's an interest in the marketplace for the products that you want to do. Number two, make sure that you could be competitive, if not better, than people who are already in the business. And number three, have a management style of inclusion and integrity. So my feeling always is innovation allows new people into a field. So if you have a good marketplace, if you have a competitive price, if you have integrity of how you deal with people and customers over time know that you're real and they believe in you, what can you bring extra to the table to make it interesting? Because all the things I just said previously allow us to be in the business. But we don't want to just be in the business. We want to be a winner in the business. So innovation has really been a key to my success. Even when I started in the previous question talking about France, I went in and brought in contemporary lines from France. This is 30 years ago or so, when nobody was bringing in lines from Europe because there was a problem with the dollar exchange. And I just found a way to make it more interesting and make it work. And when I go into products in different fields, I feel that for me to be stand alone from the rest of the competition, I have to come up with innovative ideas. And that's what we do always as a company.
Well, that's great. Since you're talking about innovation in the fashion and retail landscape right now, it's rapidly evolving with digital transformation. How are you in integrating new technologies into your business strategies at iBrands Global and other ventures?
Well, two things. I'm embarrassed to say that I'm the worst technology person that you probably ever have on your podcast. But I spent a lot of money on technology. And we've gotten state-of-the-art ERP systems that give us all information at the hit of a key. We can find out everything from margin to shipping to where the goods are at a moment to what warehouse to what lot number they are to what the price is to who is paid to when they've paid. So we're very big believers in technology. We have the best technology we can possibly get. But as far as innovation, innovation really has a lot to do in this area as well. So like, for instance, we're working with the airlines. We have business with Delta, with Alaska, with American Airlines, and we have two more that are about ready to be signed. What we did was we came up with an innovation in plastic-free. So everybody now wants to go to sustainable and things that are good for the environment. So we went to the airlines and said, we can come up with theoretically a plastic-free cup. This plastic-free cup has now gotten us four airlines and probably many, many more as we go because they need to do this.
Well, now you just took my next question away. What steps are your brands taking towards sustainability?
Well, I'll give you a good answer for that one.
Awesome.
So we have you mentioned before that we do many different industries, which is correct. And within the retail industry, we have a business now with Home Depot. And we do, during the pandemic, we were, during a long period of time, the largest importer of nitrile gloves in the United States. And one of the things that we've learned is that this glove business is a business that's been going on since the turn of the century, will probably go forever. When you think about it, people say nitrile gloves, I don't even know what that is, but you do. Because when you go to a restaurant, you see the waiter wearing the gloves. When you go to a bank teller, you see them wearing the gloves. People cleaning inside your home or in car, everywhere, there's gloves. It's a huge, huge business. So we took a look at one of the biggest players, which is Home Depot, and we came up with a patent for a, if you think about baby wipes, like how when you pull one wipe, it comes out of the package and then the other one sticks up.
Yep.
People find gloves to be very difficult to pull them out of the box and bags. And we found a way to do a special patent, a little bit different than anybody else has. We got our patent approved, and now we expect to have a pretty big Home Depot baby wipe type of glove business.
There you go, innovation.
Yeah.
So speaking of different industries, you've also ventured into entertainment with Garson Entertainment Group. How does your experience in fashion and branding influence your decisions in the entertainment sector?
Well, we were doing business, festival type business, like with people from Coachella and Live Nation Insomniac. They became pretty good friends of mine. And one of the things that was easy for me was the festival business is all about presentation, all about the show. And it's the same thing when you make an apparel line. You have to have a beautiful presentation. You have to tell a story or a show that people will believe is interesting to them. So the people that were running these festivals, who are very successful and very good men, they kind of have the same type of, I guess you can say, presentation like I do. How they have to put together a show, how they have to work out the sets, how they have to look in a certain way. It's the same thing with putting together a clothing line. So it was a pretty natural fit for me.
Awesome.
And fashion is like entertainment anyway.
Yes, it is.
Take
actually.
A look at the Met Gala. That's, what are they talking about? What everybody wore, you know?
That's true. What's the most valuable piece of advice you've ever received, and how has it influenced your professional trajectory?
Ooh, it's an interesting question. I started as an athlete. I really thought I was going to be an NBA basketball player, but that would take a whole nother podcast to say why that didn't happen. But that's what I really wanted to do. And a lot of my lessons that I've learned have been from team sports and from coaches. And one of the first lessons I learned was KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. K-I-S-S.
Yeah.
So when we're going about our business, real roadmap.
Yeah.
Production. There's finance. There's sales, and then there's integrity on how you run your business, which I keep harping back on. And I'm going to try to make my products interesting and innovative. I'm going to try to find solutions for sustainability with the airlines and things of that nature. But as far as running a business properly, my business properly and keeping it simple, stupid.
Yeah. Heard that one too. So the simpler you keep it, the easier it is.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Make yourself get crazy in product and innovation, but run the business. It should be run.
Yep. So earlier we were talking about how you had different brands and they had totally different audience or consumers. So obviously you've led a lot of successful businesses that run in different buckets, which means you've had to create leadership teams for each one of those buckets. So what are the key attributes you look for when selecting your leadership team?
It's a really good question. It's a few things. Number one,
integrity.
Integrity. You got me already. Yeah, you know me already. I'm a people person.
Yeah, I'm a little bit too.
I grew up without a dad, and I didn't have very many people that came to my aid or helped me in my life. And I'm in business with my sons. My three sons are in business with me. And I've taught them more than anything to be honest and forthright and to work with integrity. So integrity is the first thing. The second thing I like to see is applicable experience. You know, it's funny when you put out an ad sometimes for a job and you get 100 applicants and 95 of them have nothing to do with what you're looking for, but their answer will be, but I'm great at what I do. I could do anything. I could sell anything. I could this, I could that. I'm not a person with tremendous patience. So I'm not looking to integrate someone into the marketplace over 6 months, a year, 2 years of time. I'd like to have someone with applicable experience. I'd like to see someone that has had success in the field and that has not switched often from job to job. I would say those are some of the main things that I look for.
That's awesome. Well, it's obviously worked out for you. So stick to that for sure.
Yeah, there's more, but podcast doesn't last.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
So one of the last questions before I ask you a couple of fun questions, just looking ahead, what are some of the exciting projects or developments you can share with us about your new ventures up and coming besides the gloves?
Okay. So as a company, own the skies. What I mean by that is I already said in a previous question that we have programs with Delta Airlines. I think I did. We have programs with Delta Airlines. We're with American Airlines. We're with Alaska Airlines. We have two more airlines ready to go. We're doing a lot of innovation, especially in sustainable and plastic-free between cutlery and cups. And the airlines really need this. And we've come with a solution for them. And they are coming to us aggressively. And like, for instance, Delta has like 30 sister or companion airlines. A couple of them have already reached out to us. We expect to really own the skies. So one of the goals we have for our company is to own the skies. The next thing we would like to do is be one of the leaders in sustainability. We're doing a lot of sustainable products, mostly food service, but non-food. In other words, things that you can throw out that are on the table. Plastic fork, knife, but not plastic. School trays, cups, things to this nature. You know, it's funny, I was in the sexiest business, clothing. Now I'm selling cups and forks and spoons, but they're really needed And, you know, you buy one or two sweaters a year, but we do Burger King, Cheesecake Factory, so many, Disney. I could just keep going on and on with how many we do. And they buy millions of them, a year. In fact, our Delta contract is for 1 billion cups, just to give you an idea. So it's, you know, I think we can make a bigger difference going into this mass commodity market and bringing sustainability and innovation to the market. And that's what we're trying to do. Like how I mentioned, even about our gloves that we pull out of the, whatever you call that. What did I call that?
The little box, the little wet wipes.
Yeah, the wet wipes. Thank you. Yeah, so we're trying to really make a difference in the world. It started with the pandemic. All this happened to me with the pandemic because I had 7 or 8 clothing lines that were all kind of put out of business. And I've been in China since the beginning of Westerners going to China. And I had an army of people working for me. And we were able to help a lot of people. And it made me feel that I should continue on that path. So I did a real transition from more of an apparel company to a food service and janitorial company.
That's awesome. Love to hear that. Now, Mark, on a personal note, what does Mark like to do in his spare time, if he has any spare time?
I'm a sports fanatic. So I pretty much know every sport. I'm an historian on baseball, football, and basketball. I was a basketball player. And so I watch a real lot of sports. My 3 sons say I should get another hobby besides watching and playing sports. But I like to travel. I travel a real lot. I like to go to good restaurants. I like to read, things of that nature. And I'm a real family man. I would say that my family comes first, second, and third before anything.
Awesome. Love to hear that. Sound like we could have been brothers.
Yeah.
Last question, especially since you brought up a historian and you like to follow some history. If you had the opportunity to have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be and what would be your number one question to ask him at the dinner?
I know who I would like to have dinner with because I'm very strong on an issue. I'll think about as I'm answering this question what I'd ask him. But I think I'd like to have dinner with Abraham Lincoln. I've been very against prejudice since I'm a kid. I remember being in school and during the Kennedy assassination, I was a little kid, Martin Luther King assassination, Robert F. Kennedy. The Martin Luther King thing really sat with me really so negatively. I've been embarrassed about how there's been so much prejudice and mistreatment against Blacks in the world. Now I'm embarrassed about how it is against the Jews. I think that prejudice to me on about anybody, the Muslims, the Jews, the Catholics, the Irish, Catholics and Irish were killing each other. How did they know which one was which? I don't even know. I mean, it's crazy. So I feel upset about prejudice. So I think I would ask Abraham Lincoln feels would be the secret to stopping prejudicial attitude in the world. I don't know if he'd have the answer to that because nobody else has come up with the answer so far, unfortunately. But that's a big issue to me. I think prejudice is a form of ignorance.
Got it. So one last thing. If you were to give advice to young entrepreneurs, what would 2-3 sentences sound like from you?
Never give up to fail. Failure will breed success. Don't ever lose confidence in yourself.
Well said. Love it. Awesome. Mark, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope the questions were good.
They were good. I don't know how prepared I was or how well I answered, but you know, my whole point about integrity was just say the truth.
No, absolutely.
That's what we did.
Yeah. Transparency and integrity are awesome. So I'm right there with you. I may hit stop, but don't jump off yet.
Okay. So, thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for tuning in to Leadership Talks. Don't forget to subscribe for more insightful conversations with industry leaders. Your support means a lot to us.